Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts...
Smallfish.
Apparently she's learned her lesson since then and has managed to hose others. I'm proud of you now.
Why does your pride fill me with shame?
Hi everyone, episode 163, starring your hosts, Philip Blue,
Leroy J. Oh, I mean, hi, I'm the Mian Team.
Oh, the Mian Team, okay. And Mark Blue.
But I do have chicken.
Matt Dijon.
Frying up Mackie's chicken.
Wait a minute.
Dan Q.
Back in front.
Okay.
And hosting Small Fish.
Will there be a second full expansion? And this is, of course, for Civilization V. Thread started by Nag Anno back in April, but revived on a couple of occasions since then. Do you think there will be another expansion after Gods and Kings? What sort of things might be added? I'd like to see another one, but I agree it seems unlikely. I would like to see a more tangible way of using space in the modern and future eras, but I'm not sure the game engine could handle it. I hope something like that comes along with Civ VI. The only thing they could possibly still add is corporations, but that doesn't seem to be enough for an expansion of its own. If they were planning to do that, it would probably be in Gods and Kings. Now, there is a poll attached to this thread, which, as we know, is a +25% modifier for becoming a topic on this show. And this is the most substantive poll, and by that I don't mean number of options. I mean number of ballots cast. Just over 500. And yes, by just over 500, I do mean 501, where about 75% say yes and 25% say no.
I play 502 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 501.
Yeah, now we're up quite a bit.
Still a 3-to-1 ratio. People really think that there will be another expansion.
Yeah, it's just the question
probably
is
probably going off of
what?
History.
Yeah, true. I don't think there's been a recent Civ game that has only done a single expansion.
No, I don't think any of the mainline Civ tiles have, unless you go way back, even before Firaxis times.
Yeah, the only Civ that did not have two XPs was the first Civ. It just had one, which was CivNet.
Yeah, so.
And that's not a poster child for expansion packs, so we'll just talk about it.
Let's pretend that didn't happen.
We're just going to remake the game and add in net connection and pretend it's a new thing.
And Majin said, let's just pretend it didn't happen. I will avoid singing Mike and the Mechanics right now so the conversation can continue.
Excellent.
Now, Drew Bell said very early on, I think it's way too early to speculate about this. And again, remember, this thread was started back in April. And Smallfish, you actually had a comment as the last post on the very first page of this thread.
Yeah, I think it's pretty likely that there'll be another expansion. I mean, think about it this way. The Gods and Kings is like Warlords of Civ 4. Warlords added stuff like Great Generals. And we haven't really seen what the modders could do with Civ 5. Especially now that they have released the DLL.
Yeah, and not that long ago, so people are still going through that and figuring out what they can do, what doing this breaks this, that, and the other thing, how to fix that.
How to pull everything off of the Steam Workshop because you have a little and get mad at people.
Yeah. I looked at the first page of this thread just to see the initial responses to the question about do you think there will be a second full expansion? Because the second part of Nagango's said, what sort of things might be added? And it was an Endus that said, I also think there'll be a second expansion, although of course it depends on how well this expansion sells. Yeah, it does come back to business, seeing as how this is a business. This is a commercial title. They would probably like to get their money back and then make some money after that.
No, no one ever wants to make money.
Say, do you not all know how many copies did GNK sell?
There has been nothing publicly disclosed in terms of numbers with regards to Gods and Kings, or even the downloadable content that came before it, for that matter.
Oh, yeah, that'd be harder to find. But
it was like in the millions for everything combined.
It's definitely up there. I mean, Jinke has won awards, and a lot of awards are based on sales. Mm-hmm. So, and frankly, it's gotten big reviews. So you can at least think that most of the people in the Civ community have picked it up, or at least Civ 5 community. Maybe some of those Civ 4 people have finally switched over with Gods and Kings. But even still.
There are those that who are on the side of that. No, there will not be another expansion. They've essentially said that, no, there's not going to be another expansion because we've already had a number of pieces of downloadable content. And, of course, some people also speculating that, well, will there be more DLC after this first expansion? And I think that also comes back to the question of sales.
That question is just silly. Full expansion, okay, that's a reasonable thing to question. But more DLC, really? You think there won't be more DLC?
In this era? Come on, guys.
Yeah. I mean, then again, this latest patch came out, and there was no DLC attached to it, which is somewhat surprising for the Civ 5 series, because every other major patch up to GNK had DLC, as in a new Civ, basically, and this one didn't.
Very true. In terms of some of the content that some people would like to see, there were a lot of suggestions through the thread that were repeated, but I went through, again, the thread itself to try to pick up on a few of them and just to get some kind of quick-fire responses here, because most of the time the idea is suggested, but it's not really being fleshed out in this thread. DeGeel said, trading post expands to growing villages in a new interpretation, just as they did with religion and espionage.
Yeah, a new interpretation of the Civ 4 mechanic. Of the same thing.
What is old is new again. international trading routes.
Meh. Actually, some people have wanted that for a while.
You mean where we would get a bonus by connecting our Civ to the other Civ with roads?
Yeah. I mean, it's something in Civ 4. It's kind of weird that it's not in Civ 5, but
it's true.
But the way the Civ 5 internal mechanics work, it's not really that big of a deal if you don't have them.
And DeGeel also suggests a local health system using bonus resources and corporations also as new interpretations.
Oh. Oh. Man.
Imagine. What was it? Was it something you ate?
Okay. Sound effects day.
Yep.
Apparently it's spreading through to interwebs.
It's the interweb connection.
If this guy hasn't played Civ 4, I would actually be incredibly impressed and surprised. But
well, that's the thing. It's like some people, and you can see it in the thread, it's like, but it was in Civ 4, so wasn't it in Civ 5 already? And then they have to come up with new stuff for Civ 5 on top of everything that was in Civ 4.
Yes, you must put everything that was in the previous game and then make up new stuff. Go.
Yes.
Yeah, these guys really, they hurt my arguments against Civ 5, because my arguments against Civ 5 are not like that, but I get lumped with such guys. And that is a problem for me, actually. Because I like Civ 5. A lot of Civ 5's design, I like a lot. Even the things that diverge from Civ 4.
I don't know. Are we already setting up here for this to be Polycast Episode 163, Everything But the Kitchen Sink?
Yep.
Elsewhere in the thread, Haig talks about Mercenary System, Rebellion System, and United Nations Expanded. United Nations Expanded? Maybe. Mercenary System? I could see that. Rebellion System? We're not going to get RNG luck screwed, are we?
Yeah, let's not have it.
That's my only concern with that. Just don't implement like that. Let's just say that up front.
Within Civ 5 mechanics, you can build out a rebellion system. Actually, I think there's a mod that already does that fairly well, and it's not RNG-based. And it was out long before this. So,
what does it have to do with happy and unhappy kind of thing?
Yeah, local happiness and unhappiness. And then there's a... I think he also tied in some of the previous Civ 4 mechanics. So you have population based on nations and everything else, and then tiles that are percent owned, et cetera, et cetera. So he tied a few things into it, and then he pulled it all off Steam.
How rude. Tell us about this neat mod. No, sorry, it's not Steam anymore. You can't have it.
Yeah, screw you.
You know why he pulled it off Steam? So we would mention it on the show, so now it can go back.
Yeah, no.
Speaking still perhaps of new interpretations from Civilization IV, Archangelus suggests war weariness.
Yeah.
Oh, that again.
No.
Never a good mechanic.
No, it's just a mechanic to slow you down. We have plenty of that in Civ 5.
Yeah, we have plenty of things to slow us down, like, oh, lack of production.
Lack of happiness. Lack of happiness leading to a lack of production.
Yeah, we don't need war weariness on top of that. No, thank you.
maximum number of units before you lose production.
You're over your unit cap while I'm trying to conquer the world.
Well, on Polycast, we try to be balanced, so let's look at the positives of war weariness. Alliteration. And, yeah.
Yep. So
it doesn't even get heaped on the AI, or at least it didn't in Civ 4, and considering the bonuses the AI get, even on middling difficulties in Civ 5, I bet you they wouldn't in Civ 5 either, because they would be completely crippled by it if they are.
Well, especially on higher difficulty levels, where they get lots of units.
Yeah, I mean, someone did that in a Civ 4 mod and proved that the AI needed those bonuses or it was worthless. Somebody put, like, normal war weariness on the ED AI and then got into a war with it and shrunk all cities from all the unhappiness. It was stupid.
Yeah.
But it's not a fun mechanic anyway. And it hasn't been implemented logically either, at least not yet. It didn't make much sense in Civ 4. Like, people would get angry if you were winning a war. They get really angry at that, even if you weren't losing a lot of units. But you could actually lose cities without incurring any war weariness. Like, really?
Mm-hmm. Yay! But of the list of stuff for expansion that Dan's already talked about, is it health? No. We have a happiness mechanic. New UN? Actually, that wouldn't be bad, because a lot of people don't like the UN victory style in Civ 5, and I agree with it.
It's called buy out all the city-states, win.
At the last second.
Yeah, or play Maria Theresa.
So that could easily be expanded in, like, 50,000 different directions all at the same time. Corporations? Nah, we don't need corporations. We already have religion to micromanage a bunch of crap. And then if you add corporations, you have to take away a bunch of money, and you have to change things around.
The reason I don't like corporation in Civ 5 is the balance of mass city spam against vertical. Right now, vertical's a lot stronger, maybe to a fault, than it's ever been. And corporations are an ICS mechanic in a lot of ways. You know, if you start using corporations, you start wanting to settle the most crummy cities possible just to have another city so you can throw in your corp.
Yeah, not so much.
It's for a different game.
Well, I mean, you can redo the concept, change it around so it's...
I guess, yeah, you can have something you call corporations but have a mechanic completely differently. What bonuses or what yields do you tie into corporations if you do that?
You'd have to adjust a lot of different mechanics to even get it to that point. Because you already have stock exchanges and all the other stuff.
Depends what you do with it, right?
I guess the one thing is we don't need more money in Civ 5. There's massive amounts of gold everywhere already.
Traditionally, they've been a gold drain, though, so you could still do that. You can make it one of those ways to convert gold into something else.
Generally, yeah. But those something else's already have a lot of stuff, too. And then you have to balance it out. I'd much rather them spend more time on the espionage system in Civ 5, frankly.
Well,
Give me some useful things.
I would like them to spend time on the user interface and engine personally, but you know,
what is that?
I just wish you could like plant nuclear bombs with spies.
No.
Oh, there's a sick statement.
I wish we could have the old one back where you could sabotage their city production. Like if you knew they were working on a wonder, you could have your spy in there and go, not so much.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
Other suggestions from the thread, Marduk, new social policies like environmentalism. I'm not really that keen on any new social policies, to be honest with you, except further tweaking of piety, as we've talked about before. Identity crisis, it needs help.
We're already at 10, and if you look at the screen, if you go to try to add more, the UI starts looking ugly.
Yeah.
No, make it take up the entire screen completely and shrink them each a little bit, right? So it's just like rows and rows of lists, you know, like, that'd be so awesome.
Well, if they added another 5.
Exactly. If they added another 5 social... Well, I mean, we're talking about a
squish them this way. Yeah, that's going to look great.
You probably could do that.
More is better! Rawr!
Should do that, but for a full expansion, they probably could do that.
Oh, yeah, they could. Doesn't mean they should.
Thank you.
They could add all sorts of stuff.
Marduk 80 had one more suggestion, but I think Phil is going to need to go on mute for this. Random events.
Let's not.
Unless you want to put in the quest-based system and have it be more consistent. I mean, they didn't have to make random events completely god-awful and stupid in Civ 4. They could have made them pretty decent. They just didn't.
Well, and we already have quests through city-states, really.
Yeah. Six-four quests random events weren't so bad. This many libraries get a bonus to all your libraries. It makes sense.
No, what's bad is when you lock your forge while building Colossus and then miss Colossus because of it, or you had a stack of barbarian archers show up at your gates to turn 25 when you really had no possible way of defending yourself against them. And
what's that?
Yes, the Vitagarians, yes. That we can do without that. But there were other random events that I liked, and I really liked the random events that gave you a choice in the moment. It wasn't just notification, either a good or bad. Oh, guess what? This has now happened to you. Give me some choice, but the choice that you make, and however you meet that requirement, that is just, it's adding flavor. It's not being so substantial that's either going to give you a ridiculous boost, kind of regardless of the circumstance, or regardless of the circumstance, it's going to hinder you. It shouldn't be a big ticket item. It should be something that just, again, adds a little more detail, adds a little more flavor.
Do you want to make diplomatic relationships worse, or do you want to make them worse by more? That's your choice. There's been a religion in the other wedding. Multiple times. Or the Bermuda Triangle, where your entire navy gets sunk, because it happened to be on the tile where your entire naval stacks. So there's tens of thousands of hammers and quite a few turns of investment down the drain. You lose. Face.
Now, see, listeners, it's quite clear that Phil has given up on random events. I have not given up on random events. I still think that there's use for that mechanic. Hey. But anyway.
I think it can be done right, but I don't trust.
No. The answer is
all
no.
I'm gonna say.
The answer is no. This is a strategy game. This doesn't need random events. So there. Actually, a couple of the other things that Stan hasn't gotten to, but the primary reasons people want another expansion, Civs.
Oh, there's still Civs people want in the game, and they're like, why is my Civ not in there, maybe?
I want more Civs! Zula suck, Pelon sucks, whatever you want sucks. So,
it just doesn't seem right that I can't beat up on
no,
Shaka, though.
No Shaka.
Haste tradition.
There.
Blame Canada.
Please send me.
No, we don't need Canada.
Too. You look at a forum poster in the Civ 4 forums, and his avatar is a picture of Shaka with a troll face on it. Shaka is a key part of the civilization series. So is that poster, by the way. But Shaka is amazing. He needs to be in the game. He needs to ruin people's games. It's part of what makes Civ great. You're just scared because you're going to get Impy rushed, and they're going to make Impy broken in Civ 5 when they make the next expansion.
So anyways, there was the Civ thing, and then there was, multiplayer. People want multiplayer.
We're going to have multiplayer in a patch? Wait.
kind of like really slow now. Hosting system is sucks.
It has slow, improved so. A little bit with Gods and Kings. It's not so intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
But there's room for improvement.
Said it.
But yeah, it used some work.
Yeah, it's not perfect by any means.
It always use a lot of work.
In the chat, Civ Colonel Mustard says Canada and random events would be random acts of kindness. Oh, well, obviously. PM CK6 says, proposal of trade embargoes. And that is something that I would like to see back. You're thinking, wait, Dan, when was that in Civ? That was in a Civ title that we often don't talk about in Pleasant Company, and that's Civilization 3. But it was in there.
Since Civ 4, too. You can negotiate people to stop trading. There's even a diplomatic for that says minus one. You negotiated a trade embargo against us. It's hard to get it because the AI doesn't ever do it, almost. But you definitely can.
Tsukinoko, that's a tough one, wants new city-state types, scientific information broker, innovative progressive. I don't think we need any more city-state types. And, your scientific city-state type, it's called a research agreement.
Or scholasticism. Yeah. There's a whole social policy.
That too. Now, information broker gives a slight boost to the success rate of your espionage missions in other cities. Well, I like the idea of improving espionage as well as we've already talked about, but I don't really think we need or want a new city-state type for that.
Yeah, that would seem kind of useless, especially early in the game when you have none.
Yeah.
Or innovative progressive, slightly increases great person birth rate in all your cities. Oh, I want abuse.
Just call that a garden and a social policy and a wonder and a...
And suddenly you have had it all along.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Beep, 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 beep. Future era expansion. Yay! I want my parts for my spaceship properly in the future era.
That's called Alpha Centauri 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please make Alpha Centauri 2 and just be after you launch your spaceship, you start up a new game. on Alpha Centauri. You have to actually play all of Civ first, and then play the expansion. Joking.
That would be an epic game.
Actually, you could probably do that in a mod, because you just take the end of the previous game, take the save file, cut through it, find out who did what, who won how, blah, 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 and then start up a new game with those same stuff, and then change it around a little.
It's like Paradox Interactive's Hearts of Iron games and Victoria. You could link up previous games to save files, like form a cohesive timeline.
Yeah.
But with the spaceship thing, if you remember from Civilization II Test of Time, it was a remake of Civ 2 that included a campaign that once you built the Alpha Centauri spaceship, instead of the game ending, it unlocked a secondary tree and allowed the player to battle the Centaurians.
Ooh, Centaurians!
Tsukiko also talks about multiple leaders. I know I'm butchering the username, and I'm going to keep saying it so I can butcher it some more. Wants multiple leaders per Civ. Leave the unique ability tied to the Civ itself and just give the leaders traits that would give you a boost in specific areas so that you could fine-tune your Civ to suit your playstyle.
No. I'm actually kind of enjoying this one leader per Civ.
I will take his suggestion for barbarian states, though.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we have to be a little careful with that just because we already have a city-state mechanic in there, but I think it could be workable. Very little else. Nagano says, wants a greater use of resources, including the addition of deep-sea resources. So you could improve tiles that are outside of your empire, but they become homesteaded because it could spark disputes, that could spark wars. So I'm thinking, well, that sounds kind of like colony situation, where in Civilization III, you know, here's a resource that I don't have, like saltpeter, we won't get into. Easy, Maggie.
Saltpeter.
That you don't have in your empire, and you need that for gunpowder units. So then that's kind of a beacon to other civs on the planet. You might want to do something about that.
Ooh, space lasers.
Space lasers. What? Space lasers is a topic? That would be awesome. Oh, yeah, Dan, give me the topic with the username, which is just like, what? Is every early war victory Pyrrhic? So, I'm not going to mangle that.
It's Dag Hammarskull.
That Hammarskull, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, he says, inevitably, when I've got two cities and I'm working on a third, some jerk AI declares war on me and sweeps in with 7 or 8 units, taking my second city. I can generally win it back by rallying the units I have and pumping out units from my capital. Once I've got the city back, and once I've taken one or two of the AI's cities from him, so they left to do to end the war, I'm way behind on infrastructure, enhanced on tech, economy, culture, etc. At this point, he despairs and quits. The one time he continued, he was indeed far, far behind for the rest of the game. So does early war have to be a hopeless setback? Are there ways to catch up? And he's playing Gods and Kings Prince. May make a difference.
I don't think the war itself is the issue here.
Yeah.
The issue is being...
The issue is tanking the wrong things and probably building some nonsense, would be my guess. I don't know where to start because there's not a lot of information in here. But it tends to be the problem in a thread like this. And you see a lot of threads like this in any Civ game. It almost always comes down to just picking wonky things early game and then getting yourself really far behind as a result of doing it.
Yeah. If I don't build the warrior after the scout, barbarians kill me. Uh-huh. Some people spend way too much time going after the barbarians and therefore building early units than focusing on other stuff. One or two archers do just fine for all the barbarians, but some people like to build whole armies and go chasing down the barbarians in their camps and then find out that that costs a lot of money and isn't really that useful.
Yeah, on the archery point, a little later in the thread, he talks about that his tech path usually goes pottery, sailing, calendar, mining, masonry, animal husbandry, trapping, then archery. It's like, whoa. Oh,
why is archery so far down?
And we also have not yet got writing, so we're researching all of these texts without writing, without a library.
Okay, that's problems number one and two right there.
Yeah.
He's trying to expand to a second city when his city must still be like a size 2 or 3, so he's stifling the growth. He doesn't have the production. as I already mentioned, he's concentrating so early on constructing units from the beginning where he could be improving luxury resources and then selling them to the AI. I know it's not as lucrative as it once was, but if you get it early enough and you make enough contact, he also talks about how he lost his initial scout. So he had explored very little by that point. So, you know, he doesn't have the gold from being able to establish contact with other civs to trade. He's not finding city-states to get some gold, whether it's, you know, for being the first or later on. He's probably playing with ruins. It's on by default, where you could also get some gold from there. And he's not building a monument early on or going down the tradition path and then getting legalism to get it for free.
Yeah, among other things. Actually, one of the very obvious things, the Pilgrim posted a screenshot. I think it's on page 2. The guy built roads to nowhere.
Oh, that's no wonder.
Ouch.
He built a road down to a new city location that he was going to try and settle eventually.
So the road even pre-existed the city itself.
Pre-existed the settler.
It is forward planning.
That's not the right kind of forward planning.
Yeah, it's not Civ 4.
Yeah.
That was situational in Civ 4. Sometimes it was a good idea. Sometimes.
Yeah, but in Civ 4 you could spam roads and not...
You say that it wasn't costly to spam roads, but spamming roads in Civ 4 killed you. It was actually a pretty noob move because you need worker turns on something useful. Or if you overbuild workers, that means you didn't build things that were useful otherwise and still got comparable slightly. It was a big deal. You would set yourself very far behind overbuilding roads. And
so I know, but on the gold side of it, though, wasn't so bad.
No, whatever. Opportunity cost versus direct cost. It's functionally, it screws you either way. I guess worker improvements aren't as strong.
Well, it's just not as often, probably. Given early game, which is what this guy is in, he's not going to be improving every single tile constantly.
Although if he's trying, that's another point.
Is an early war a Pyrrhic victory? I do believe the answer was no if you know how to fight an early war.
Pyrrhic referring to Pyrrhus, who was an ancient statesman.
Hold on. We have to explain that to our audience.
Hey, never know. Victories against Rome. Rome suffered greater casualties, but they had more men to draw on so that the casualties didn't do as much damage to their war effort as it did to Pyrrhus. So isn't it great to have such a thing named after you? What a way to let your name live on in infamy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what everyone aspires to.
You lost through winning. Good job. The Pilgrim wants to know what the appeal of siege units is.
Hello? Have you played the game? Siege units, let me think. I can knock down all the city defenses and then my scout can walk in and take the city just to be insulting as possible.
Mackie, you can be blunt if you want. You know, you don't have to...
You don't have to play nice.
I was not expecting that from Mackie.
The Pilgrim, thankfully, is one of the smarter ones on the CFC, so when he asked the question, it is a reasonable question. Basically, the siege line... Yes, is extremely strong versus cities. Basically, you get triple damage versus cities, so they do a lot, or triple attack versus cities. So they're great for ripping down any city that has defenses and other such things. But since Gods and Kings switched the just pure range strength to a multiplier, they get shot up fairly easily. And with the inclusion of composite bows, many people have been using those instead of siege units for attacking cities, because before the modifier, they have slightly higher ranged attack than catapults, but obviously with the multiplier, catapults still win. But since they have a slightly higher ranged attack, they defend better versus cities' ranged attacks. Unless, of course, the city has boosted itself up. So people try and stick to the archery line because composite bows are good versus units and cities versus catapults just being useful versus cities and not so much against units, which is exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
It is a little silly, though, that they are so weak defensively against ranged attacks, because historically siege isn't that weak against ranged attacks. It's weak when somebody comes up and slaughters you because you're sitting behind this huge machine and can't really fight effectively.
Yeah, I understand when a swordsman comes up to the side and attacks the catapult, but when the city itself is just firing arrows at it, that's...
Oh, it might not be arrows. Cities had siege
pots
units.
Pots of boiling oil, but...
And cities had siege units. They had their own catapults and trebuchets to throw stuff back.
Yeah, but those things were awful field units. They weren't even good at hitting other catapults. You know, that stuff was really for attacking cities only. And then as you get later in the game, things like cannons and artillery probably should be really strong field things.
Yeah, well, they are. They're stronger.
Yeah.
Usually the question about siege units, people lump them all together, but siege units is more like catapult versus composite bow, and then even crossbow versus trebuchet. But once there's real defense, then you absolutely need catapults. I mean, you could surround with a ton of ranged units, like composite bows and crossbows, but speed and efficiency, it's more on the catapult side. And don't forget, siege units can get cover one and two versus ranged attacks. So they will eventually, if you take the promotions, not to mention they have volley, which is plus 50% versus fortified units and cities. So siege units can do quite a bit of damage, far more than ranged units will, especially as time goes by. So once you start hitting cannons absolutely own crossbows when it comes to attacking cities. Actually, they're also pretty good versus just any units in general, at least at the time. And then, of course, once you hit artillery, that's it. Artillery is the way to go until flight.
Yeah.
So it's the early, early game that's in flux when it comes to composite bows versus catapults. Trebuchets I'll definitely take, but it's also a matter of efficiency. You need one catapult for 2 to 3 composite bows. So if you want to go efficiency-wise and you don't have many spaces to put units near the city, then definitely siege units are the priority. Because if you can get 3 catapults or 3 trebuchets, whatever, within range of a city on a turn, and they don't all get wiped out, which is the other usual problem, then they'll rip the city down in maybe one and a half turns. Whereas if you get 3 to 4 composite bows next to that very same city, it's going to take 3 to 4 turns at least. And that's a lot more damage that you're taking, which is not as useful, which also means it's more time to let backup get to that city, maybe rush buying more units at that city, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah,
you don't want wars taking a long time.
Now, keep in mind, I mean, if the city has no defenses, it doesn't really matter what you have. You can throw a rock at it and it'll knock it down. But once, especially once castles start going up, the arrow-based ranged units, not as useful versus cities.
For me, I look up with the composite bowman and the catapult. If you're looking at taking a city, but there is the carpet of doom around it, there are any kind of units around it, then you want composite bowman in there first, because catapults are crap against units. I mean, you're already going to be dealing with the city, right, bombarding your catapults once they're in position. But you don't want the units to be able to do that, or the units to be able to be right next to it, even right across a river, and do some considerable damage or take it out. So once you've got the units cleared, then also, in addition to that, moving the catapult, and look at the defense of the city and compare that to the ranged combat of the composite bowman, which is 11. And with catapults, if it's going against a city,
it's times 3. 8 times 3 is 24.
So you want to look at what the defense of the city is to then determine, okay, how much damage am I going to be able to do to this city in one turn. You want to do as much damage as, I mean, ideally, let's attack the city on this one turn and take it.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, then you got to think about, okay, particularly if I'm going after units, if I can't completely destroy a unit there, the AI is probably going to use its, it's not a complete insta-heal, but they could heal up enough and then, oh no, now they've taken it, now they've sniped it. So you have to take into account the units that are around the city and the total defense to decide what combination of composite bows and catapults you're going to have in there, plus your melee units to also protect the units as well, you know, if they're side by side, because you don't want them to get stomped over in between turns.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's a matter of planning. If there are still units around a city, or just even in multiplayer, if there's units near the city, kill the units before moving catapults and stuff up to the city. Unless, of course, you can put the catapults in such a place that the units can't touch them because you have yours in the way. Don't go siege the city and wonder why people are surrounding you.
Yeah, you want the visibility from other units as well, because catapults have that limited visibility. As we've already discussed, they also have no defensive bonuses. So that also makes them quite vulnerable.
Yeah, at least except for the cover one and cover two. Probably two of the most underrated but completely forgotten about promotions. Why do my siege units get attacked so easily? How about take these two promotions? But no, I need to get to range and logistics.
And maybe it would survive to range and logistics if you just took cover first.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to think about the defensive promotions as well as your offensive ones. My unit has great offensive promotions, but it can't defend itself very well. Oh.
It better be an artillery.
Yeah, you also have that time to set up to attack as well that takes the one movement point, so...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. So if it has to go on the defense before it can go on the offense, uh-oh.
Ruh-roh.
There's still a question on the balance between Compsa bows and catapults in there. Or just bring a battering ram and be done with it.
Archers, composite bowmen, catapults, trebuchets, cannons. Oh, how do we get to all of these things?
Indeed. This next thread is started by John Yoga, and it is titled, The Tech Tree, Why Bother? Hello, folks. I will show my ignorance here. Why bother with having the tech tree? You need each tech piece anyway to get to the next stage, and they are all intertwined and interdependent. Therefore, why bother even having this in the game? Sure, you can bias yourself with a small amount of turns down one avenue, but so what? You need to backtrack and fill in the order of tech pieces anyway, sooner versus then later. What am I missing? At present, it's just a silly micromanagement piece, like that of constantly having workers being clicked, knowing that the auto AI management doesn't always work. This is an amusing thread, and I'm not sure if we're supposed to take this seriously in the first place, because, you know, like, why play the game, right? Like, it's a game, so it doesn't matter. Why play it?
I want my I win button. I don't want to do anything.
What is this?
I don't have to think about what tech path. This is a strategy game. Why don't I have to strategize, man?
You know what, though? You know what he should do? He should just take my suggestion of going down the honor path and building nothing but units, only units, lots of units. And then he won't have to worry about the tech tree a whole lot.
I also have a suggestion. The user John Yoga, who says his name is Mark, play Risk. You don't have to worry about a tech tree and Risk.
True.
You're welcome.
Please hand your copy of Civ 5 to somebody else and stop.
Stop the madness.
Please point out that going down one tech avenue first can provide a tremendous advantage that lasts throughout the game, but most of the game are aware of that, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Basically, yeah, I don't find much of what he says in here credible, but that's just me.
I do hate that automation is so worthless that you can't use it ever.
Well,
that,
the AI automation is crap, so we all know that, whatever. Never let the AI do anything that you can do. And there's no such thing as silly micromanagement, unless it's, of course, to silly micro click the button on workers every single turn because you have to. Usually when you tell something to do it, it generally does it, and then you don't have to silly micro by telling it to do it every single turn. That would be silly. Choosing technologies in a tech tree because you have to make strategic choices about what you would like to have. That's not silly micromanagement. That's just, you know.
It's not even micromanagement.
I know. It's like, what are we going to do today? Let's research writing. Great. Next turn. What are we going to do today? I know. Let's research writing.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Yeah, that would be horrible. This seems like a troll-a-lol thread.
That was its original intent, then okay, I can accept.
I don't think it was...
It did its job. It was its intent.
Later on the first page, John Yoga follows up. Perhaps there needs to be greater further-reaching tech-stealing and tech-sabotage abilities and more accidental discoveries in the game.
Yes, please give me more stuff for free, and please don't let me think.
And at random, too, I might add. He wants randomness. Oh, I know. Let's add skill equalization to the game in greater volumes. Let's just ask for it directly. That's probably the best way to go.
Yeah.
Why sugarcoat it? Just ask for skill equalization. That's good.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yep. Whoever the leader is, they have to give away everything to everybody. Because
yeah.
Yep.
Or everybody will just randomly discover all their technologies.
Another volley in the thread from John Yoga. I think what I've learned from others on this thread is that my playing quick and or easier difficulty settings may be why I'm not seeing the tech tree usage as germane. Spreading out the time must really matter.
No. Even on quick speed, there's choices.
Yeah. And they matter because you get things soon. Not to mention that the game itself goes by sooner, so a couple turns advantage matters a lot on quick.
Yeah. Oh, and then later somebody told them to come to my Beyond the Monument series and Watch my videos. Well, so he's probably eventually going to hear this.
Well, good. It'll be educational. Now that you know how wrong you are.
Yeah, it's probably not what he's going to think. But, oh, well. I do not care for crap. There is no slingshots to catch the leader. There is no BS, get stuff for free. That is not strategy. Suck it up. Learn. Play. Win.
There is a slingshot to catch the leader. It's called Dogpile.
That's not quite what we had in mind there, yeah.
Well, it's effective. It will work. It's
super effective. Hopefully.
Phil just said that to meet the trolling requirements of his contract for this show.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
That's okay. No, the other dog pile, that does count, but that is in there. Well, that's slightly different. And you can win that dog pile, so
have. You can.
The year that was for Civilization and Polycast. Well, let's see, for Civilization, and this is official Civ and related to Civ, and it does not just include Civilization 5. May 16th, Civilization 4 lead designer Soren Johnson leaves Electronic Arts, having worked on Spore and Dragon Age there, and now at Zynga on a secret project, which is still secret to the public today. The 12th of June, a Reddit user discloses his decade-long Civilization 2 game, a perpetual multi-front war of three superpowers, and it quickly went viral. Sid Meier reacted publicly a few days later. The 19th and 22nd of June, a little-known expansion called Gods and Kings is released for Civilization 5, first in North America, then the rest of the world. August 31st, Civilization 5, the mobile game, released, and that did not go viral. A little editorialization in there. Whoa, my bad. Or was it? October 25th, Civilization Online MMO for Asia announced. Developers XL Games responsible for the massively multiplayer online role-playing game Lineage. And we've talked about all of these things already on the show. And then on the 1st and the 20th of November, there is a Civilization Fall patch and Civilization Fall hotfix released respectively. For Polycast, this is going to include all of our siblings here, you know, in the Polycast family, because there are five. January 7th was the first Polycast episode of Season 6, 25 more for the rest of the year. On the 7th of January, the first tweet on the Polycast Twitter channel was published. Yes, that's twitter.com/thePolycast. January 15th was the first episode of Turncast's second season, 12 more throughout the year. January 28th, the first episode of Civcast was released, Civcast focusing on Civilization World, and two more episodes throughout the year. And then Revcast had its first episode of the year on February 25th, episode 38, with six more for the year. And then on the 16th of June, we released the second modcast pilot because we were still waiting for the Civilization 5 DLL, still, which eventually was realized at the beginning of November with the fall patch. July 14th, Lisa Q and Al Bang leaves Bob Polycast after 2.5 years as a regular co-host, and Majin joins. July 18th, the Polycast YouTube channel goes live with the automatic caption availability on all Season 6 episodes.
What was that? The automatic hilarity availability?
Yeah. Hilarity ensues.
On October 1st, we asked for nominations for Polycast in the Best Produced in Gaming categories of the 2012 Podcast Awards. And on the 28th, we were able to announce that, hey, we were one of the successful nominees in the Best Produced category. The voting occurred between the 1st and the 15th of November. We are not going to know until the 7th of January whether or not we've been successful or not. But hey, in this case, as we've discussed before, it was just an honor to be nominated, and we're not just saying that. December 5th, Revcast is available on the YouTube channel. Civcast became available on the YouTube channel on the 12th. And by the time this episode is released, Turncast will also be on the YouTube channel, so you can have even more automatic hilarity. And I'm going to jump a little bit ahead here to the Polycast announcement, which is to say, what about 2013, Dan? What's going on? What's going on? Yes, Polycast has been renewed for a Season 7, starting in January 2013. And myself and Makalua and the Mian team and Majin are all returning as regular co-hosts. Are we insane? Yes, but you should have known that by now. Colonel Mustard says in the chat, congratulations, Polycast. Keep it up. Well, thank you very much, sir. He's a past guest co-host on Polycast and a player on Turncast, as it so happens. Anything else or comments about the show you want to say to all of our, you know, dozens and dozens of listeners?
I'll tell you something that didn't happen, and that was thing off. We didn't make this happen.
Polycast the musical. That's still a possibility. We're taking that off the table, Bill. It's okay.
I'm trying to stay from having to listen to that. I don't think you want Polycast the musical.
Blooper reel. Here are outtakes cut from earlier episodes this season due to time. What do you think, Phil?
What's that?
Imran, pay attention.
Hey, I'm reading the topics list, okay? Does that sound like Imran to you? No, that's nothing like Imran, all right?
Sorry. Wow, talk about touching a nerve and pushing a button at the same time. Whoa.
And we will be taking song requests, like Losing My Religion, the theme to DuckTales.
We will be taking your requests, but we will not be fulfilling them. I think that's...
Yes.
Not that I can actually remember all the details. So don't test me, please.
Oh, you're going to fail the quiz.
I'm going to fail the quiz. And also on top of that, when you have the battling, things like that, it's not as... I forgot where I was going with this. That's my first mistake right there.
You know, Phil, how you said that people tend to disagree on these things? I disagree.
I hear this now. Agreeing. Yes.
I disagree that people tend to disagree.
Trust me, you don't want to accidentally agree.
I hope she'll say something later, and it'll all be fixed in post-production.
She hasn't actually joined the call yet.
I introduced.
Oh, she's got no mic.
Mic doesn't work. What?
Earlier. No.
Is it on mute? Can you hear us? Is it on mute?
Oh, I hear someone.
Yes, we can hear you.
You sound far away and in a cave, but we can hear you.
Okay, do I sound better now?
No. No, you sound very muffled.
I sound very muffled, huh?
It sounds like you're in a car in a tunnel.
I was going to say AM radio, but a lot of our audience might not know what the heck that is. But let's say it anyway.
Is it better? Is it better?
Were you singing?
Where is the microphone in this? Oh, my God. Wait a second. Is this the microphone? Can you hear me better now?
Oh, yes. That's way better.
That's way better.
Oh,
Where's the microphone? It's the thing with the microphone looking device.
Yeah. No.
Given the fun that you've had, though, we won't tease you too much. But sorry, we couldn't resist that. The initial reaction. We're jerks.
Dan is.
Oh. That's like, speak for yourself, then.
Yes, you guys are all jerks. This is why I've been spending 3 seasons, because I really love talking to jerks.
Oh, well.
You found your true home.
I did.
Well, if you like talking to jerks, we'll try to increase the jerkiness now that you're here.
Phil!
It's all right. Talk to you about this for me.
I find that I use the first spot.
Sorry. I sense today's theme.
Imranery returns.
I'm going to have to start calling you Imrania or something. Again, that's over at giantmultiplayerrobot.com. Or no, that's wrong. Wow, I didn't say that.
Sorry, it's confusing, I know.
You want to register that domain now? I just cost you guys like another $10-$15. Multiplayerrobot.com, rather.
Just for a moment here, let me channel my inner Twinel, former regular co-host, and point out that you don't loose the aluminum, you lose it. So that's spelled with one O. Please, this is one of the most common and annoying frustrations on the internet with spelling. Well, it's way up there. You're not loosing arrows, you're not loosening your belt, you're losing aluminum. So please. Most of the people I see making this offense actually are not English as a second or third language people, but rather fellow countrymen who have it as their only language. So please, please spell this properly. Okay, I'll stop now.
There she blows. Kind of like this topic.
Not much.
The answer is simple. Yeah, they still work. Next.
Problem solved.
Ah, yes, from episode 133. This thread is started by Dan Q.
Troll thread.
Wait a minute. Phil, what episode did you say that was?
From 153.
Oh, I thought you said 133 there for a moment, but okay. All right.
No, I definitely did not say 133, at least not intentionally. Sort of was in that regard, because you are making some rather sweeping changes over time that way.
Wait, did you just go, it sort of was and sort of was?
It sort of wasn't. Did I cut out? I might have cut out. It sort of yeah. was and sort of wasn't.
Question from the last episode. Jabber... Oh, wait, no, I'm not supposed to introduce this. What am I doing? John, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just on a roll. Speaking of do or not do, yeah, these segues just get cut in post-production, but it serves our purposes in the live format. Oh, that's me. Oh, God.
Speaking of doing the do.
This is the day of not noticing.
No, that's just smooth.
Because I thought of you. And, you know, we should think of others before we think of ourselves.
Oh, I have to back up for a second. I got this one in. What?
We have to think of others before we think of ourselves. Max is like, oh, yeah, speaking of myself.
I was just laughing at Dan's joke in general. I don't know.
All right, the broadcast has started and the extra recording has started. Oh, my God.
You forgot to turn off your window, didn't you? Good thing it's under the 30-second rule.
This episode, Dan learns how to use the mute button.
Hey, Dan was shameless with his polyclass cast. Yeah. Shameless.
That would be you.
Monvar.
Yes, the science victory condition. I'm still getting better at it.
Don't worry, Monthar, in post-production, I'll just make it sound like you took even longer to pick up on what we said. It's okay.
That's all right.
Dan's so cool. Fine.
Speaking about getting hit over the head with a club.
That was called a transition.
That's not my topic.
Hey, I know.
Producing games, but not following segues, apparently.
Oh, yeah. is this to me to introduce the next topic? Is that why we're... Oh, trust the new guy to keep us on schedule. Yeah, that always works.
Oh, whoa. No, Derek, you've been a guest on this show.
That's true.
You're just recycled.
Oh, that's worth it being called.
Slightly used.
Not really sure how good of a Mackie replacement you are, you know, in the sense that you didn't stop us from singing. You really didn't have a lot of estrogen.
Yeah, I also don't have a cute voice. I just have this sultry baritone.
And of course, you know, I'm still recording this, right?
I know.
You are now on record for admitting the fact that you do not have a cute voice.
Yep.
Well, but I'm also bragging about my sultry baritone.
Not after editing is over, you won't be.
Did anybody call today? In?
Well, you have to ask them.
No.
At the very least.
Oh, we have to ask them. Oh, you might actually ask for that.
No. Oh. Yes.
So, are you going to?
No. Skype numbers. North America is 301. What?
So somebody in the chat has just asked you to sing the numbers, please.
No, there will not be singing numbers. There might be counting of numbers, but I won't be singing numbers.
We do have 7 guests on the Ustream chat that have either not registered for a Ustream account or are not logged in, so they wouldn't be able to actually give questions in the chat.
Oh, it's 6 now. We've chased somebody away.
It was threatening to sing the numbers that did it.
I think it is time for a strategic stage exit left.
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
Hey, Snake Opus.
I like the exit down, personally.
Anyway. It's not all about you, listeners. We have to have fun doing this, too.
And the only way we can have fun is if we don't talk about Civ. Is that what you're saying, Mackie?
Well, it's been interesting today not talking about Civ. wrong button. I was going to hit the mute button so I wouldn't accidentally comment over the end part.
That timing was so awesome. That struck me so funny. Holy shit. That's just some of the nervous energy there. I don't know. Oh, man. No, thanks, Becky.
I'm very good at hitting the wrong button, apparently.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I mean, we can talk about all the rough highs that have been pulled on Dan over the years.
Yeah, even recently.
Even 2 years ago, I remember some rough highs pulled on you. And listening audience means basically that as the game is winding down and our co-op sessions are about to end, somebody declares war on Dan. The most frequent person to do this was previous guest co-host Rough High. I was often permanently allied to Rough High, so I was forced to lend assistance to my great ally and take some cities with rifles.
That's ish in co-op.
Yeah, that's the
yes.
ish.
There's just an ice beam capital and capital piece. And be able to do anything, produce any, and I'll have a random chance of thought turn, but it'll happen, so you'll spend the entire game with a freaking capital. You.
What'll actually happen is your internet connection will start to break up, and your threat cannot be heard, so it cannot be realized, so
yep.
That's bad.
The floor internet said no.
I think some people do want the kitchen sink. You should be able to make food. And...
Hey, we have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, you have to invent cooking technology for you to use your food resources.
Well, then you have to be careful, because remember, you have to have don't eat that.
Gotta have don't eat that.
We really need that check. I love that.
You start throwing things like rocks into your mouth or spears that the enemy made and stuff like that, and it just doesn't go well. So you do need to know what you're not supposed to eat.
Yeah.
Spears, the earliest form of toothpick and why it failed.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a thesis topic right there for anybody. No credit required to go for it.
Yep.
Actually, please don't credit me. Last joke for 2012 on Polycast. It sounds awfully forced.
Beep. Beep. Beep.
That's the best joke ever. What are you talking about?
I'm advanced. Oh, I know what the last joke is. Trying to close this episode.
Yeah, that would be a good joke.
Not going to end, listeners. Oh.
It's not happening.
Show never ends.
It's the show that never ends. Because Maggie
it goes on. Wait a minute.
Joke's on you.
This has been Polycast episode 163, where we discussed all sorts of random stuff to finalize the year, and then we decided to just close it off. This has been Medjin saying goodnight for 2012, because, 2013's a new day. Enjoy your holidays. Do everything too much, because, you should. And whatever. Perfect role model time. Otherwise, I've been joined with Makalua.
We'll see you on the other side if the planet's still here. Lololol.
The me and team.
Start by hitting you my asshole in the ear.
Wow, because the V got chopped out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both is true for Phil.
Yeah. Well timed Skype cutting out.
Thanks, Skype.
Skype trolling for the final joke. Dan Q.
Slide, slide, everywhere there's a slide.
Huh? And he is trying. And we've been joined by first-time guest co-host, Smallfish.
Happy Armageddon, fool.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Record date December 15th, 2012. I love the edit button.
Yeah.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.